Hi, good afternoon. Stephanie Alva here. I'm not hearing anything, so I just want to make sure I'm logged in to the right one.
Hi.
Hi.
We're here.
Happy Monday, everyone.
You too.
You too.
Me too.
My name is Grace, by the way. I'm the new addition to the group. Started.
Hi, Grace.
Hi.
Hi there.
I listened to the replay tape, so we have a Stephanie, do we not? I wrote down the
Hi, name. And welcome, everybody. Sorry to interrupt. I appreciate your promptness. We have one more esteemed member to add to our already esteemed group. Grace, I know you're here. Would you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and your journey to coaching and what you'd like to get out of our collaboration?
Okay, thank you. Thank you,
Again,
Dave.
Again, sorry to interrupt your...
That's all right.
I never want to interrupt good gossip.
It's a good thing we didn't gossip about you.
Oh, okay.
yes, my name is Grace. What's lacking in my practice is the whole coaching. I am brand new, totally brand new to coaching, but not brand new in life experiences. I used to own my own business, real estate brokerage. And then when my last child left home to go to college, I left too and did the new adventure, got my PhD, and I just finished and made contact with Dave, and I thought I could get a refresher on the coaching Live a New Life story.
Tell us about your PhD and how that relates to your interest in coaching.
Yeah, my PhD is on mythological studies and with emphasis in depth psychology. And even before I finished the program, I had thought that one of the ways that I can use my degree is to teach this way. I can teach through writing, I can teach through public speaking, and also through life coaching. I can use my life experiences as well as what I learned in studying all the mythologies of the world and studying them through the lens of depth psychology, which is a study of the unconscious. So I'm kind of trying to find some ways to mesh this with Dave's program and give me a turnkey way of getting started into life coaching. So
I think you've come to the right place. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Great. Well, let's check in. Any wins or progress notes, challenges, things you'd like to talk about? Any of you? But one at a time.
It's Anne-Marie.
Please go ahead.
It's Anne-Marie. A huge progress for me versus last week. It was a lot of information sort of drinking from the fire hose while we were on the call. So I spent a lot of time just really trying to digest and make actionable what we heard. I still am having a little trouble. I had a lot of trouble, I should say, when I sat down to write my story because I really just did not know where to begin. I'm not good at short stories to begin with, and maybe I'm putting too much pressure on myself, but I would love any perspective you have, any addition. I know you didn't want to give that last week, but it was a little paralyzing for me, I'll be honest. I wasn't quite sure where to start or how to start.
How far did you get?
I mind mapped, which is my way or my most comfortable way, at least, of getting some stuff out or get through the paralysis at least. And I was very focused in my present story, where I am now. And I, as I look at it, it's much more feeling related than anything else. So I at least got out the story of my feelings and emotions at this point in time, given some challenges that I'm facing, especially.
Okay. One thing that I think will be helpful to each of you is something that is encompassed in the reading for today and that we're going to go over in beginning today, the first three steps of the roadmap and the initial aspect of assessing a story. And that's the exercises for needs and ideals. And I think you'll find that those exercises are going to be helpful for you to really get a clear focus on your needs and your ideals, because especially for ideals, that has to do with your purpose and what you're about. And the only place that I know that self-esteem comes from is from having your own ideals that are attainable and living up to them. The antithesis of that, of not living up to your ideals, is a feeling of shame. And that's the worst feeling we can bear, because it's not something you can do something about unless you address living up to your own ideals. So that would be a good place to start. That's one thing that almost every client I began with in mentor coaching is I'll ask them to do those two exercises for needs and ideals. And it helps both of us get an idea of a core essential motivation that they have and a sense of what their fundamental ideals and purposes are and their needs. There's a little bit of background noise with the dog. If you can mute, it's picked up even though it may not seem like it's going to be picked up. And I request that the client send me their top three needs and their top three ideals, usually right after the first session. And that way we'll both have a clear idea of how to incorporate those into whatever strategies and goals that they have, so that there's an alignment of their needs and ideals and goals and strategies. When all of someone is going in the same direction, there's no stopping them. There's a case illustration in the curriculum about someone whose needs and ideals were cross purposes with their avowed goals, or their conscious goals at least. So that might be a good start. So it's a work in progress. It doesn't have to be, you know, it's not something you can just sit down and do in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So let it be a work in progress. Let it be something that you're that you're reflecting on, because this is one of the most important things that we can do as coaches and develop in our clients is self-reflection. A couple of articles more recently in Scientific American Mind and the Harvard Business Review said that self-reflection is the most important quality that an executive can have. And I totally agree with that, but I think it's not just executives, but all of us as adults, and it's something that we develop or catalyze with our clients, and we'll talk about how we do that. And of course, it's useful to do that ourselves, because our own self-awareness is quintessential, as we are the instrument that we use in coaching. Not having sterling steel instruments, and I don't employ numbers of instruments, but the ability to know our own story told in our own voice is the most important prerequisite we can have in helping a client develop his or her own story. So does that make sense as a beginning to sort of further your focus and work there?
Yep. Yeah, wonderful. Very helpful. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Well, other thoughts, questions, things that would be helpful for us to talk about? How are you finding the curriculum and the reading of that parallels our, I know we've only had one seminar, but the parallel of the reading and the seminar, how's that seeming to you?
Hi, this is Stephanie. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. This is Emmy. I just wanted to say I liked it. I found it useful and interesting. But I'm also a little bit behind because my book just came. So.
Okay. Now, you have the PDF of the first couple of weeks, right, so that you don't get behind, right, Emmy?
No, it came, so I have it. I have
oh,
the...
It does. All right, good. Good. Okay. All right, well, good. Thanks. And Stephanie, what about you? You said you were about to start.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it's working well. I'm reading the PDF. And what I find is good for me is that it's like something that's solid. I kind of am like a more of an instinct coach. So I follow my instincts and I ask questions and I say, well, this is what worked for me and what have you been doing? And, you know, how has that been working for you? What can we change about it? This, I think, is more like a 1, 2, 3 step. So for me, it's almost like now I have something that I can give people that is step by step versus, you know, just simply following my instincts with every client that I use. So I'm excited about it.
Okay, well, good. Yeah, I think that you'll see that this is a system of coaching. It's not something that you need to fit a client into, but it's really for your own benefit so that you'll have a way of systematically listening to a story, understanding, synthesizing, integrating it, and based on some integration of psychology, neuroscience, some other disciplines that I believe will be helpful from the mind and brain sciences to really help understand and catalyze changes of stories and new stories of someone's experience. So we'll, and I think this is going to make more sense after we go through over the next 4 seminars the roadmap process, because that's really the system to deconstruct and understand a story and then to reconstruct a new or revised one. And after that, we'll do our own roadmap case studies. I'm going to send you each a sample of that within the next week so that you'll have an idea of what one looks like. And the link to the compilation, I think there are 32 different people who have done the training that we put together in ebook. And that's available for like $5 or $6 on Amazon if you're interested in looking at those case studies. So that might be interesting to you as well. So any other thoughts or questions before we move into our conversation?
Yeah, I have one, Dave.
Yes.
How are we supposed to use these materials, like the big handbook, which I don't have yet? It's still coming, the new life story, the owner's manual. So that is supposed to be for us if we have a new a client, for example. What do we recommend they get? The workbook or
okay,
kind of?
Those are two different questions. There are two different answers. The curriculum is New Life Story, The Owner's Guide. That's the one that you'll be receiving. If you haven't received it, it's one that I sent the PDF of the first couple of readings. That's the curriculum that corresponds with our seminars. And one of the downloads, when the page you were directed to when you signed up, the same page that has the 12 ports for the playback or MP3 download, you'll see 3 or 4 things that you can download. One is the syllabus, and that's the seminar and the corresponding reading in the curriculum. So those two go together, and like the reading for week 2, for seminar 2, would ideally be read before the class, the seminar. So that's a way you can get maximum benefit. And the workbook is incorporated into that curriculum. The workbook pages are in gray to correspond with suggested use with clients, and those are ones I'd suggest that you do, those exercises yourself on your story. Now,
okay.
The workbook that I mentioned that I'll send to you at the end of the training is the client workbook, and that's the one that can be co-branded with your name on the cover and
oh, okay.
a new message. But that's simply the peeling off of the exercises, work pages, the annotation, the glossary. It's a complete workbook in itself, but the curriculum contains the workbook and a whole lot more. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, if I am working with a client, would I recommend that they buy also the whole owner's manual, or that's just for me to know what to do?
That's really for you. I mean, that's the work you've done. That's the
okay.
training you've done
okay.
to get to the point of being able to totally focus on them. And because
okay.
if they could do all that themselves, they wouldn't need you. But you're doing all
that. It's kind of like giving the client a PDR on a patient.
Exactly. You're doing the training so that you can specifically
yeah.
address the needs of the
yeah.
client.
I get it. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Other thoughts or questions? And during this time, too, as you began to work with clients, those of you, some of you may already, if there are any challenges or vignettes or issues that you have with clients, we can spend some time here and benefit everyone in discussion of that. And I think everyone can be benefited if we discuss a focused aspect of a case or a vignette with a client or a challenge that you have. We'll also use this time later in the series to do your own roadmap presentation. And we'll devote like 15 minutes to your presentation of your roadmap and then discussion around it. So anything else now?
Dave, I have one last question. As I read through the first module in the book, I wondered, and I'd love your reaction, if there isn't a way to find out if this is a program that is better for some people versus others. So is there a way to assess whether this would be, a client would be a good fit with this program, whether it's something that they need or, maybe there's less about creating a new story that's needed for certain people and more about sort of jumping right in for others.
Okay, that's a good question.
And maybe I'm being premature with that question, so I'm fine if you table it.
No, I think it's a good question now, and I do want to respond to it. I don't think there's any client that is that should be fit into this program. There is no program for a client. This is a program for training. So I would say that with this training, with the expertise, the sophistication, the ways of understanding how the mind and brain sciences can be applied to strategic coaching, that you will be able to fit your coaching into any client that you want. So the benefit is for you to inform you, to inform your listening, to inform your intervention, and how you strategically enable and catalyze a client story. Now, that story may be a pro athlete about performance. That story may be an executive about social or emotional intelligence. It may be a life story. It may be life coaching. It may be people who have had challenges with adult-onset medical illnesses or people who are retiring. This is going to apply and inform how you're listening to and how you can respond in a more strategic and informed way to every client you work with. So they don't have to fit into the story metaphor. This is a metaphor for training and for your understanding and to convey a wealth of information about change and choice architecture to apply with an individual client. Now, how does that sound to you?
I love the it is a shift in thinking, shift of how I've been thinking about the program, and I love it. So I'm taking that forward with me. That's my filter now, as
okay.
opposed to
okay, good.
as
so
opposed
to two addendums to that. One is, and I touched on this last time, we usually think in coaching and do training and coaching, like those of you who have done the CTA course, about developing the skills and the specific aspects of the core competencies in coaching. This is different. This is about creating a system, having a system of change, a system of how the mind and brain works, a way of systematically engaging in conversational, emotional, and social intelligence and applying it for change. So the another part of that is the 28-week protocol. There is a way to more specifically offer a format for work for people, or especially for groups who want it. And you'll see one of the downloadable documents is a 28-week protocol. Now, that can be expanded or contracted based on the need of a group. I've used it, as I mentioned last time, with groups who have done training with me. The first three groups I did were groups who had done training with me in this and New Money Story and wanted to do a group and wanted to work on the exercises and work pages in the client workbook themselves and talk about it. So that's where the 28-week protocol came from. And each week there were certain assigns, like for 28 different weeks. We met 3 weeks a month and talked about the exercises and work pages. I still treated it like a group. So at the beginning would say, what would you most like to focus on? And the group would decide together. Often they would decide some aspects of what the assigned work was, but sometimes not. So it was a coaching group, and they decided where they wanted to get to with it. So it's that 28-week protocol can be useful if you want a structure, because I put this together initially and avoided anything like that because I didn't want anybody to start fitting it into a program or assigning stuff or, you know, having a Procrustean bed that they would fit a client onto. But still, there was the request that I wanted to respond to. If we want a structure, or if the clients want a structure of a way of going through some or all of this, then, you know, that's there. And that's something that is only a suggestion. And that's my caveat at the beginning of every training that I do is, you know, I'll share with you some very specific notions of what I do and what I do with clients and whatever you'd like to know about my practice. If you'll hear it, not as this is the way you ought to do it or should do it, but this is simply one way of looking at it. This is simply the way Kruger happens to do it this week. You know, so.
Well, thank you. I love it, and it's very hearing it. Honestly, hearing you say it is extremely liberating too. Because I'll be completely honest with you. I look at this workbook now, or owner's manual, a bit differently than how I have been looking at it. So I'm sure you mentioned it last week. I'm sure it was a little bit of fire hose piece that I may have missed the emphasis on that. So I'm seeing it very, very differently now. And I love it.
Your question illuminated it, I think, in a better way. So I appreciate that. And that's why our training is confidential to us. The posting of the recordings is only for our group, because there will be things that you present, maybe if you present your own material for the roadmap case study, or if you present it to the client, that's confidential information. And the more that you bring of your own experiences, and I'll bring mine, we share that, and that makes it more lively and more meaningful, and to have more depth the more that we do that. So I appreciate that, and I think it just adds to the value of what we do.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else?
Grace, Dave, I want to just add a little comment on the same question, and how I am perceiving how I can use this and what Dave, of course, said, that you can use this in any situation where someone needs a change. But also I thought it's really useful for me because I am doing a change, a transition. And then I thought, oh, well, this will really work also for someone, you know, a client who is transitioning. you know, just like I am now. So it's like creating a new story, moving from this part of your life into another.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where we begin, is to look at our own change and transition. Each of us who are professional coaches have gone through significant change and transition, at least professionally, if not in many, many other ways too. So I think it's useful to really be aware of our own. In fact, I'm starting a four-part teleseminar series later this evening at 7 Eastern with CTA about coaching transitions and looking at the dynamics of change and transition and the navigation of various life passages. So that's something that we all do. And I think being aware of and having some mastery of our own is, again, the very best prerequisite that we can have in working with clients. And to really know and learn the stages of change, the stages of transition, the dynamics of both, and the process of being a catalyst for those kinds of transformations with clients can be huge. Okay, well, thanks. I'm going to start with our material, and then I want to save some time at the end for discussion. Now, we've discussed the power of story and the concept of writing a new story. Now I want to look more closely with you at how to do that, at the principles and practice of change step by step. The actual implementation of the ideas are not always easy. They're simple, but not always easy, because they require us to change the way we think about our lives. This is for us and for our clients. For example, breaking bad or outdated habits. It involves departing a comfort zone, developing new ideas, the discomfort of the unknown, and remaining disciplined over the long haul. So in this seminar today, we're going to look at the first three steps in the roadmap process to address new life story transition. Recognize authorship, own your story, and assess plot and storylines. So first, a comment about operating systems. We've touched on this before. You're aware of how computers have operating systems. Within the hardware, comprising the programs, is a complex system of software that contains instructions, protocols, and couplings that enable the system to function smoothly. Your life story has an internal operating system with a set of beliefs and assumptions about your behavior. We're about to deconstruct that system in order to study it, understand it, to then decide where it needs editing, rewriting, or simply updating. So, step one, recognize authorship of your life story. Remember the premise here. Every moment, we actively construct what we think, feel, and experience. Each is a choice. Every day begins a fresh page. The dramas of everyday life don't simply affect us. They're created by us. Yet so often the story closest to us, our own, is the most difficult to know. You know, and think about how difficult it is, you know, to sit down and write, what's my story? Insight, understanding, even coming to the end of the past to end an old story are important, but they're not enough. You have to create a new or at least revised story to be in. So, how can we tell our stories to ourselves to know what to keep and what to change? Now, your clients will probably recognize that they author their own stories, but as you listen, you'll hear beliefs or assumptions that ghostwrite a storyline that's limiting. There may be blind spots. There may be unconscious beliefs. And I'm going to give you an example in a minute of an elephant who's an elephant in every way except for one little belief. So there are four principles in recognizing authorship. First, our experiences are always consistent with our assumptions. Beliefs are what we consider our basic truths that determine our experiences and results in our life. Our beliefs write the software of our behavior. How do you find out what someone really believes about something? You simply ask, well, how do you know that, though? Now, here's an example. A baby elephant can be trained from birth to be confined to a small space. The trainer ties a rope around its leg, stakes the rope in the ground. The baby elephant will initially try to break the rope, but it's strong and it can't. The baby elephant has to stay in the area determined by that length of rope. Now, fast forward. The elephant grows to a mammoth adult size, 6-7 tons. It could easily break that little rope, but it doesn't, because earlier as a baby it couldn't. This 6-ton adult elephant is constrained by his assumption based on earlier experiences. Putting a little rope around one leg activates a belief system that determines behavior. Beliefs cue behaviors. A belief is the mind's command to the brain. With the same belief, you'll continue to have the same results. If you change your belief, you can have different results. That's one of the ways we come in. Principle two, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. Our beliefs become our reality. Some things you have to believe in order to see them. Our possibilities are always a manifestation of what we allow ourselves even to consider. The beliefs within us, our own internal map of reality, determine our perception of what surrounds us, including what and how we select, register, and process. We construct our storylines from these premises. We have to bring our beliefs into conscious focus to assess how well they work in present time. This is what we do with clients. And you don't get what you want, you get what you expect. We always make our beliefs come true. Remember the two anthropologists. If you believe that no one will love you, you're going to interpret behavior and perceive responses in that way and act even so that you won't be lovable or will block someone from experiencing intimacy with you. You'll act in such a way to teach people how to respond to you. This actualizes your beliefs and validates your assumptions. Also, select carefully the people you spend time with. You're the average of the 5 people you're around the most. Do you like the results? Are they kind, successful, disciplined, achievers? Or, one oversimplified version, are they winners or losers? Choose your friends and colleagues well. It makes a difference. We're going to return to this at a later point. Third principle, a new story can only occur by being in the present moment. This is one principle that distinguishes coaching, the focus on now and next. For example, social scientists discovered that when you measure people's intentions, you affect their behavior. When people were asked what they intend to do, they're more likely to act according to how they answer. For example, when you ask people the day before an election if they intend to vote, it increases the probability of they're going to vote by 25%. A study of 40,000 people asked, do you intend to buy a new car? The question increased purchase rates 35% over the next 4 months. Other behaviors with increased frequency. Asking if people intend to eat certain foods, to diet, to exercise. In the simple coaching model, the basic coaching model, the final step of each session is to frame an action plan for the next week that the client intends and commits to do. Fourth principle, our minds seek closure and infer causality, whether or not it's accurate. A number of research illustrations show that we find something to make sense of what we perceive, even if it's not cause and effect. Now, these research findings suggest that people are unaware of the reasons that they do what they do, but when asked for a reason, they readily give one in order to bring closure. An example, a number of recent studies by Dr. Dan Gilbert of Harvard showed volunteers' words flashed on a computer screen for a few milliseconds. This was such a short time that they were unaware that the words were shown, this was subliminal programming, and they couldn't even pick them out or guess from a multiple choice, but they were influenced by them. For example, when the word hostile was flashed, volunteers judged others more negatively. When the word elderly was flashed, volunteers walked more slowly and carefully. When the word stupid was flashed, they would perform slightly less well on tests, and this was all for the next 40 to 45 minutes after the word was flashed. Now, when these volunteers were asked later why, for example, they walked the way they did after elderly was flashed, there were two typical responses. First, they said, I didn't walk more slowly. And then when they were showed the video, they didn't say, I don't know. They quickly came up with a fact or an answer that explained it to them. Well, I was jet lagged, or I haven't been sleeping well, or I've been tired, and I've been really stretched. Each was unaware of the fact that they were falsely attributing cause and effect and denied the actual reason. These findings demonstrate how our minds bring closure and our brains end any dissonance for us to have a causal explanation. To create a complete story infers both closure and a sense of effectiveness. Complete trumps accurate. This is why we rationalize or justify or do any other number of mental gymnastics that bring closure without ownership or growth. It's like a finish without an ending. Now, in the workbook portion, I would especially recommend reviewing the exercise in step one, recognize authorship of your story. It's on page 1.9 of the owner's guide. Now here, plot refers to the core themes and storylines of a life story or any other specific story, money, wellness, career, relationship, that inform what you look for and how you attribute meaning to what you find. Now, here's an example of recognizing authorship. A woman wrote me after reading my book, Destiny, An Uncommon Journey. It's an allegory of self-development with destiny, the ship undergoing transformation inside and out. She said, this could be a profile of my life. I'm sure a lot of other people experience the same thing. I don't want to live this pattern over and over again. There seems to be this circuitry that I keep entering. Destiny had to trust in order to learn. When will I learn to trust? I keep peeling back more layers. How many layers to these distortions are there? She elaborated how frustrating therapy had been for several years with different therapists. And I wrote back the following response. We each have a personal story with a plot and storylines. Our beliefs ghostwrite that story. When you peel back all the layers of the onion, what's left is not a pure, unadulterated onion, but nothing, since you've destroyed the object of the quest. Instead of the model of layers going deeper to discover the next layer, consider generating a new story. In other words, stay in the present and look at possibility instead of problems, going forward rather than backward. You can even assess when you're rewriting an old story and plagiarizing an earlier version of yourself. Then you can edit the repeating storyline or create a new one. She decided to work together in coaching for a few months to create a new story. She now writes stories for a major U.S. publication and is working on a second screenplay. She asked me when we ended coaching if I would be in the audience when she was nominated for an Academy Award. Second step, own your story. And here's where I want to emphasize the assumptions and motivations constructing storylines, this exercise in particular on page 1.13. From an infinite sea of possibilities, our beliefs determine what we see and how we process it. It's our software package. Adding more information to the millions of bits of data we process daily, like a new diet or health club membership, is likely not going to have an impact unless you change the software. As we examine how a storyline is constructed, here's an equation that I think will be useful for you. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. So, and you'll see in the curriculum, there are some examples of empowering beliefs. I can make the money I need. I'll find a way to love my work. Also some examples of limiting beliefs. Well, I really can't find time to exercise. I don't have enough experience, or my opinion doesn't matter. So what we have to do is to be aware of our default modes, the way we figure out how to adapt or cope with things early on is often the way we continue to do that and do it by the default mode. But first, we have to experience this as a choice instead of just the way things are. And this is what I mean by recognize authorship of your story. Now, notice how these examples I gave include a variety of responses, behaviors, reactions, even complex patterns. A specific example, we're in a unique position as coaches to observe patterns. The brain seeks patterns. Metaphors and narratives become brain structures. One example is attachment patterns. And there's a white paper that I have done that I want to send you on attachment patterns that I did for an earlier mentor group. And it's something that I think you might find beneficial because it's something that you're going to see in working with clients that will be manifest in the process with you, that a client will recreate a kind of an attachment pattern with you that will be like attachment patterns early on. And so many of the fundamental attachment patterns were established even before there were words in a language. And we just naturally continue to use these same attachment patterns even when they don't work as well. But this will illuminate and I think give you a way to look at and a language to think about the different attachment patterns that you'll see that are manifest in the work with your client when they show you exactly what it's like to be them. So think about your attachment patterns, the default behaviors of your relationships with important people. Many may have been etched early on with essential people in your life. Even though it's a default model or mode, even though you've incorporated it as your own model, even with children or spouse, partners, it's still a choice. You can choose to continue or choose another pattern, another habit. Just because you have a history with someone doesn't mean you have to keep repeating it. Now, here's an example. I was working with a CEO of a successful company that he founded. His son had a condition that if his son took medication and remained without symptoms, if he took medication in a continuing way, he could totally remain without symptoms. He had a bipolar disorder, but his son would not take his medication. His son, who was a PhD in his early 30s at the time, had been hospitalized this time for the sixth time since he was age 20. And my client was about to repeat the same pattern he'd engaged in the previous five times over the last decade and a half almost when his son was in crisis. He would rescue him. He pulled up stakes and moved for a two or three month period to wherever his son was hospitalized and be there to support him, to help him, to help with the transition, and visit him every day. And he would sort of put his company and his life, even his health, on hold. So as we looked at this, he acknowledged first that his efforts had made no difference. This was the same attachment pattern that he had had in his childhood and in the childhood of his son and with other people in his family. But he recognized when he looked at it objectively, it didn't help. It didn't prevent a relapse from happening. So by doing this, by engaging in it again automatically, he was enhancing his sense of helplessness. He was focusing on what he could not determine, not on what he could. So he needed to stop rescuing. Part of what we did in coaching was that I recommended that he and his wife attend CODA meetings for support, Codependence Anonymous, for people who have loved ones who will not take care of themselves. He was one of the most loving dads I know. And then we worked at his strategy to not repeat the same behavior. And a bunch of this was very counterintuitive for him. But what he did through this was that he let go. He let go of this very old attachment pattern to begin to relate to his son in an adult way. He didn't rescue him. He didn't treat him in a codependent way. He treated him adult to adult. At this point, his son is taking meds consistently for the first time in his adult life. And after almost 6 years, he has had no relapse. He has a faculty position at a major institution and has started a family. So by changing that attachment pattern and doing what he could be effective in doing rather than just reentering and rescuing and being codependent, my client created a very different experience for himself, his family, and his son. So a fundamental precept of step two, own your story. Whatever you experience, you either create or accept. And let me say that for specifics for us. In adulthood, whatever you experience, you either create or accept. And that's a component of owning your story. So let's apply that notion now by talking about point of reference. The point of reference is a basic component of story writing. People who don't own their stories have a premise of an external point of reference. This theme can include passivity or resignation, and their experience then is usually of helplessness. They often transfer responsibility to someone or something outside themselves. They react to situations they're in. So here are some typical examples or characteristics of those with an external point of reference. And this is what we're coaching toward for an internal point of reference. In other words, any one of these for me is a coachable moment. And that's why I have an agreement with every one of my clients that I can interrupt them at any point that I want to make a point or highlight something or for us to look at something together instead of waiting until there's two or three paragraphs that are passed. And I want the same for me. I want them to be able to interrupt me at any point so that we can clarify right there what we're talking about, because I see numerous coachable moments throughout any session. So here's some examples. They feel as if they have little or no control over things. Life is just happening to be reacted to. Well, there's nothing I can do. Another of the external point of reference, they're vulnerable to the responses of others. Their language can even absolve them of responsibility. She makes me so mad. They focus on responding rather than creating, reacting rather than planning. Well, I have to do this. They see themselves as unchanging. Well, that's just the way I am. Some of these are way too easy for me to say, by the way. They believe they can only change things by changing the outside source or person. If that other person would just respond like I know would be better for them to do, or like I've tried to get them to. When they experience a symptom in their bodies, they medicate it away. And that's like seeing a warning light on the dash of your car and turning off the connection rather than pursuing the problem. Now, contrast that with those with an internal point of reference. They see authority as their own. Their premise is acceptance of responsibility. Their theme and experience is effectiveness. They know that at least since adulthood, they write their own stories. Here are some of their characteristics. They recognize accountability for their own lives. They're proactive. They plan. They look around the corner. When experiencing an unpleasant result, they examine the chain of events that generated the result. Then they look for alternatives. Remember, we've talked about the most fundamental way that we can even talk about coaching is we look at if something works, keep doing it or do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something different. When they see a result that doesn't work, they decide not to continue. They decide what to change and initiate that change. They also realize that the menu of choices is created. You can choose, and you can choose how you choose. And here's a related notion, to recognize active versus passive positions. We touched a little bit on that this the first time. Sometimes the story seems to write itself, to just happen to you. Well, I ran out of time, so I couldn't work out. My thoughts ran away from me, or it just seems to keep happening. Every one of these is a coachable moment. I will freeze frame and replay it and we look at it, because this is a way someone's constructing their story. And if they construct it as if they're passive, this is not about grammar, but it's about how language reveals a position that one takes vis-a-vis one's own authority and one's own ownership of the story. If you say, well, time ran out and I couldn't work out, it's as if somebody else is in charge of your schedule. So you have to eliminate all the outs. And remember the anthropologist, the idea of a gun was enough to change everything. These passive positions disown the feeling, and I don't say it to a client in a trigger word or something that will be heard as negative or pejorative, like that's passive, but just to look at how constructing the way they're viewing it in that particular way doesn't allow them the active option of choice. So these passive positions may disown the feeling or thought or action as an act of creation, as if, for example, the feeling you create makes you its victim, as we talked last time. This passivity masks personal initiative. Rather than managing, overcoming, countering, or medicating a feeling, such as anxiety, the first step is to acknowledge that even though it seemed to just happen, you generate the experience. Then you can examine the meaning you attach. Insight and understanding alone do not generate a positive, successful new story. You have to create it. So, the third step. Once recognizing and owning your life story, step three, assess the storylines and plot. Now, here's something we did not learn in high school. I didn't even learn this in medical school. A belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in the brain. It's a physical part of a neuronal network. So that means a teacher or a coach can't simply present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from a student or a client's brain. You can't just list the three reasons an idea is wrong and expect it's going to rearrange somebody's neural network and pathways. Or expecting that to present a new fact is going to overwrite the one already there. But change can occur. It's a process, not an event. It's an inside job. So what we want to do is to perturbate the system, to look at questioning whether something's working. If not, why not? What's another way to look at this? And what we're doing in this step, basically, is to assess beliefs to see if they're limiting or maybe even to try out new beliefs. So what's another way of looking at this? How might those thoughts be limiting you? Who has a different perspective on this? Are there questions I'm afraid to ask? And at some level, you know what they are, because denial is a powerful engagement, just like a secret is. What do I really want? What do I need to let go of? And here I want to emphasize, this begins on page 1.17, the two exercises that I already mentioned about distinguishing and addressing ideals and needs. And I'll let you read more about them, and there's some supporting documents there that will give you a better sense of what I'm talking about. Ideals especially are internal standards of excellence. They serve as a personal model of value, an internal guide to purpose. Living up to a personal attainable ideal generates a sense of worth and esteem. Failure to do that, shame. Needs are essential requirements, a necessity for mind, body, or spirit. So, unmet frustrated needs create discomfort. So these are exercises that I think you'll find important. Do them on yourself and pick your top three needs, your top three ideals, and see how what you're doing now or goals that you have in a particular endeavor are aligning with these top three needs and ideals, or if you need to incorporate the ideals and needs more into the strategy and the goals. Here's a vignette that I want to offer. It illustrates work to clarify needs and ideals and align them with goal behavior. And notice how we can learn just from someone's language and behavior some of the assumptions that drive their stories. Client said, I feel like I've been cheated at the end of the day. It's 9 o'clock at night and I haven't eaten yet. The way my schedule goes is that I come home from work and my wife hands our son to me, and I'm in charge of him from 5 to 7. I love that, but I'm tired. It was an infant boy. She uses that time to do her computer work. Then I finish work from the day, and it's at least 9 o'clock, and I'm stressed out. I highlighted two aspects of what he said for him to look at with me. I've been cheated the way my schedule is. I pointed out that he was speaking as if he were not writing his own story, as if it were ghostwritten by someone else and not even approved by him. And I knew he was in charge of his own schedule. Then I asked him simply, why are you writing your daily story in a way that you don't like? He paused. He was kind of dumbfounded. He said, well, I guess I feel like I have to. I feel like I have to support my wife and take care of our son in that way. My work just spills into the evening, into my private life, so I don't work out or relax. I even have to take calls from my people during the time with my son. Something is assumed and expected of me when I walk in the door. I feel like someone else is in control of me. And I said, what do you hear yourself saying now? And he thought a moment. He said, well, it's like somebody else is writing my story for me. And I said, you're not acting like you own your story or your company. And he said, well, how can I protect my time with my son? And I said, every yes you have to pay for with at least one no. Those yeses are getting pretty expensive. No protected time to be totally with him, or him and you. No total immersion in free play. And I said, and he agreed with that. He said he was frustrated. I said, let's start at the beginning. Assume every day is a blank page, and there's nothing on it until you write it, until you create it. How ideally would you like your day to be? And then he began and looked at and structured that, and then got to the time he wanted after work for his family and to relax. So he constructed a day in which he was in charge of his schedule, in which he proactively decided each component of that structure, the boundaries, the parameters. He even worked in, at my nudging, a time to exercise in the afternoon. And I said, I hear you beginning to write a different story to take care of yourself. It's also a powerful model for your son, for him to see fully how a man can take care of himself and others. And when he was really getting it, really reflecting what we were saying, I decided to go for it. I said, I want to share a hunch to see if it's useful for us to consider. I suspect the frustration that you've more recently spoken of about your company, your marriage, how they're there at a subliminal level, but get communicated so that others feel it somehow, your wife, your employees, your customers, I'd guess it registers as something not working quite right for you or they, and you don't know exactly why until it lights on something that makes it make sense, even though it's not the real cause. And he thought for a moment. He said, yeah, like when I blow up or fire somebody. And I said, that would end the tension for a while. He added, well, yeah, until I'm off to the races again. So he recognized that he needed to structure a way to meet his own needs to take care of the foundation of his wellness, his needs and ideals, that he was creating a personal and professional mastery. So by having clear boundaries throughout the day, he could be totally immersed in work during the day and after 5:30, totally free at home. No calls, nothing. And the boundaries were respected once he set them, and he respected them. Both were very restorative for him. So, a couple of things I want to add. Part of the assessment of a story is to understand conflicted and contradictory storylines. When you feel with one part of the brain and plan with another, you need a map. A paradigm, also called a mindset, is a model. It's a theory or frame of reference. It's simply the way we see the world. What we perceive, understand, and interpret is our individual paradigm, our map. The paradigm is the map that explains the territory. It's not the territory itself. With the right map, planning and strategy can make a huge difference. We each have a number of maps or paradigms in our head, storylines. We're often not aware of having them, but just assume that we see things the way they are. Now, a dilemma means having two or more mental maps in conflict. For example, if you read the anxiety or the uncertainty, we touched on this before, of a new experience in an old paradigm, such as anxiety equals danger ahead or uncertainty means wrong decision, it makes sense to stop. A current paradigm, though, reframes the excitement and trepidation of moving ahead in new territory as a signpost to progress. Another example, we need to be afraid of the right thing. We fear what's readily remembered that has more emotional impact. We also fear what we can't control. It's far more dangerous to be behind the wheel of a car than an airplane seat 18C. We feel we have no control. So we're afraid perhaps of the wrong thing there. Another thing that we need to be afraid of the right thing, smokers who are afraid of flying. Averaged across all participants, smoking shortens their lives by 5 years. Averaged across all participants, flying shortens their lives by 1 day. People may fear someone entering their homes and committing a violent crime more than food on a daily basis entering their bodies that clog arteries and cause heart attacks. So one of the unique qualities we have as human beings is self-awareness and the development of self-reflection, as we were talking about at the beginning of this seminar. We are not our old story. We created our old story. We are not our habits or thoughts. We can think about these things and reflect on them. We can examine our paradigms to see if they serve us well. So, as we listen to our self-statements, what people say and do are inevitable, unavoidable self-statements of their beliefs and personal realities. Whatever you attribute to others, another person, group, or culture, comes from inside you as a self-statement. We always perceive and create outside to match inside. So, pay attention to what you consistently like and dislike in another. Don't project your intentions onto someone else's behavior. But acknowledge and own everything about yourself. Take yourself very personally. Listen carefully and explicitly to all the messages from your interior, to your whole truth. Feelings never lie. The body cannot deceive. If you want to find out what you believe about yourself and the world, look around at your life. It's the self-statement, the mirror of what exists inside you. You may feel preoccupied and disrupted internally. Then you'll notice that your house or office or car reflects that experience. All that you say in the syntax of thought, feeling, and behavior is about yourself. And remember, too, everyone else also makes self-statements. What you say about me doesn't tell me about me. It tells me about you. What someone says about you has everything to do with that speaker, even though focused on you. So listen, take in new information, but don't take it personally. All others can do is share their experience of you. It's their experience of perception, their point of view. You can share your own experience of someone else, but be aware that your perceptions are also filtered through your own lens. So listen for repetitions of the old story as well. We each generate a life story with a recurring plot. We repeat its continuing formula over time, even if it's not a winning one. Each repetition may more deeply reinforce basic assumptions and the false belief that you're a victim of fate. And remember this, whatever remains unconscious will likely be attributed to fate. Remember how we want to seek closure and infer causality to bring closure to our minds and brains. Whatever remains unconscious will likely be attributed to fate. To re-enter an old story and attempt to write a better ending creates a variation of the scenario, a new edition of the same process. The more you run away from something, the more you engage it. So, the more apparent it becomes. And sometimes you can recognize something the first time only by denying it. At times we repeat just to see in relation to a fixed point of reference how much we've changed. Each time we return to the chorus of the song, the repetition is satisfying, but those same words are slightly different because more of the lyrical song has unfolded. We see more of the evolving journey at each juncture of repetition. We've all had that experience. We go back to a high school, my first recognition is going back to my high school auditorium. When I was a player, did a presentation, it's like the whole world was out there. Well, I mean, at the time, the whole world was, but it was a 300-seat auditorium, and it looked so much smaller now. Like, how could I even think that then? You're always reaching your goals, whether they're conscious or not. And think about that. If your personal or professional life is not as gratifying as you'd like, if you believe you've not attained your objectives, look more closely. It's helpful to know consciously and specifically what those goals are. You might be undermining your success by being too vague in your objectives. Do you fear specifically yet dream vaguely? And to each of you, do you have a business plan for your coaching practice? Let's return to this, and I have a template I can send you if you're interested. For example, if you want to change your body, begin with changing your body image. Visualize the specific image you want to achieve, your ideal body image, your true body self, not a false body self of overweight or out of shape. Then create an informed plan to get there. Your body is the projection of your mind's software. This is a really useful example, I think, of revising a story. 95% of people who diet gain back the weight that they lost plus an average of 2 pounds. Why do they gain their weight back? Because they don't change their software. They don't change their body image. They change behavior, but not their identity. Listen to your language in regard to your goals. If you say you're going to try to reach a goal, you may be protecting yourself from anticipated failure. Trying immediately says there's not a full commitment, a potential diversion to other alternatives against failure. You know the words of someone not committed. I'll try, I should, I ought to, I know I need to. These build in a takeaway, a detraction, by not being totally committed, by creating an out. When someone says, I'm going to try to quit drinking, you know they're going to keep drinking. Here are the words of someone committed. I will. And this is what you want to get to at the end of every coaching session when you look at framing the session and having the client state a commitment to himself or herself out loud with you as a accountability partner, what they're going to get done between now and when you meet again. And you want to hear the commitment, as an I will. And I would suggest write that down and start there. And if they don't mention that at the beginning, ask them about it. After just a time or two, they'll begin to do it regularly. And as coaches, we build in accountability by asking, by when? Or SMART goals wouldn't have a T on the end for time bound. So, and finally, listen to your body. Your body always speaks to you. When you listen to whispers, no one has to shout. You sense it and feel it when you eat healthily, work out, rest well, at the time, and especially later. And we're going to return to this in Module 10, in Seminar 12. But here's the prologue, and that's the one on wellness. Here's the prologue. Listen to somatic language, to the message in each pain, discomfort, dis-ease, change of function, exhilaration, sensation, energy spurt. There are no accidents within the system, the story of your body. As with any complex system, A change of one component affects every aspect of that system. Of your body's 11 systems, only two have memory, the nervous and the immune. A new story involving your body inscribes a new text for these two systems and benefits your entire body. Now, here's a final thought. Schedule an appointment with yourself. And the passive version is, if I can find time, schedule an appointment with yourself to do two things, two different appointments, really, because they're different states of mind. One is to meditate, and one is to brainstorm. And here's a suggested prompt for the brainstorm session. Everyone on Earth has one thing in common, one thing for all of us. Our choices in life define us. Those who provide service to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, especially parents, have their answers counted many times. What will yours be? Make it matter. Okay, we have just a few minutes for our discussion. I'm interested in thoughts or questions, or first perhaps just clarification of how you're hearing this and what your thoughts are.
This is making so much sense. I'm hearing it so much better, and it really coincide with what I know in my training. So I was happy to hear that I'm not having to learn something different, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, great.
So, it's very good, thank you.
This should just extend and apply what you already know.
Yes.
Good. And create a more of a systematic approach to what you already know and do.
Yes, exactly. And also, we can each personalize, you know, our, well, make our own coaching story, you know, make a story that makes it, create something that makes it more nonlinear. You know, when I look at these bullet items or numbers, it seems so linear. But yet, when I'm hearing what you're saying, I get it, you know.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, is we have, for training purposes especially, we have to talk about it and read about it in a linear way, but it's anything but, and it's a little more challenging to talk about the system, and that's so very important for what we're doing in this way of thinking about it, because it's easier to do it linear and simple and, you know, the next step and all that, but this is, you know, an attempt to capture the complexity and to make that as simple as possible and to look at how to understand the system in a systematic way.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Other thoughts? Questions?
Dave, I wanted to make a comment, more of a thank you. I genuinely appreciate the anecdotes, the analogies, and you know, some of the very sticky one-sentence messages that you insert in some concepts that might, you know, otherwise be take a little bit more time to process. So there's just been a few so far that, as I've read them or as you've said them, just really hammer home the point. Your comment about your client, you're saying don't keep peeling back the onion. Perhaps it's time to, I thought of it as time to plant a new garden type of thing. Or the, are you dreaming, are you failing specifically but dreaming vaguely? Things like that. I just want to say thank you. Because things like that, just sort of take all this stuff and distill it down. And I know when I'm in the moment, those are the things that I fall back on sometimes with clients when, as I'm trying to apply new ideas.
Yeah, I think that's useful because someone who's been so steeped in a particular paradigm, like this client who I mentioned, had been in numerous therapies and had been frustrated because she kept going back and looking at the old thing, but and what she and the therapist didn't know is that every time you go back into a problem or an area like that, even ostensibly to resolve it, to understand the dynamics, to write a better ending, what it does is etch it further in your brain. So this is why some people in some therapies get really stuck. And it's by looking at things in a new way, looking at possibility, that activates new connections in the brain instead of regrooving and etching further an old one. And that's why, you know, if you look at, of all the things, what we are most, what everyone is addicted to, what is the one common thing that everyone is addicted to? And that's problems.
Problems.
We know how to talk about it. We know how to do it. Mm-hmm. We know how to explain it. It's a familiar territory. It's limiting, but it's familiar. And there's a little bit of discharge when we talk about it because, you know, it's part of the Ain't It Awful Club. But every time you re-enter that and engage in the same issue, even to write 1,000 better endings is still engaging the same process and recreating the same old story and etching it a bit further each time and even furthering the identity of someone in that issue. So that's why it's especially important to, you know, to look at possibility and to have someone's identity evolve and transform with the viewing of new ways of looking at things. Well, I know we're out of time. Thanks very much for all your participation and energy. I appreciate it, and I look forward to picking up with you right here next time. Bye now.
Have a good week, everyone.
Week, yeah.
Thank you.
Great week. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.